the book nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Hello, welcome to Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Madeline Fitch. She joins us on the telephone in southeastern Ohio, and she has a new novel out. It's called Stay and Fight. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Madeline, I absolutely love your book.
Thank you.
What led you to write it?
Well, I was working outside in southeast Ohio, working for a tree trimmer, running ropes on the ground, running chainsaws, and meeting a lot of my neighbors. I just moved to the area. I've been here about 11 years, and I just started hearing a lot of interesting stories and noticing unexpected things. You know, I'd come from the Pacific Northwest, and I was learning a lot about the area and about the trees and the plants and the neighborhoods, the communities, and people started telling me stories about black rat snakes in their houses, and, you know, truth is stranger than fiction. So I started taking notes and, you know, jotting down scraps of conversations that I was hearing, and just really having a listening ear and participating, being part of my community, I think is what led me to write the book. And then in the middle of all that, of course, I found out that there was a high-pressure pipeline, fracked gas pipeline, being permitted to go down the side of right by my house, 200 feet or so from my house, right when I was about to have my first child. And so that led me to get to know my neighbors even more, because, you know, that's how resistance to all these pipelines always starts, with neighbors talking to each other. So I think at that time in my life, every single thing that was happening in my life just was all going into the novel. Just put it all in the novel, the kitchen sink. It's all going in there.
Mm. Yeah. We have four points of view, four different, I guess you'd call them, narrators. And the first one is Helen. And from what you're saying, it sounds like you're a lot of Helen.
Oh, I hope not.
Okay.
You know, it's funny. I mean, it's a novel. It's fiction. So
right.
It's not autobiography.
Okay.
But I would say that there's a lot of counterintuitive stuff going on. So biographically, I did come from the Pacific Northwest to Appalachia, and I had fun kind of understanding my own experience by maybe exaggerating it or making fun of myself, and a lot of that went into Helen. But then a lot of people say, oh, Karen is such a jerk, and why does Lily stay with her, and she's so rigid, and I think, oh, Karen's, to me, the only reasonable one. She's the one I identify with the most.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't suffer fools, you know, so
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different ways that kind of autobiographical influence works its way in, I think.
Sure. I like Karen a lot.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah, let's talk about Karen and Lily. Who are they?
So Karen and Lily are raising a child together in the hills of Appalachian Ohio, which is where I live. And I think they're living partly on their own terms, partly by circumstance, in a pretty wild way, in a way that a lot of people would consider unconventional, so building their own house, living off the grid, but also in a way that has a lot in common with how people have lived around here for generations. So, you know, using an outhouse and that kind of thing. And yeah, Lily works at a hardware store. Karen's a nurse, and their child is Pearlie, who, when the book starts, is a baby, and then through the most of the present action of the book is a rambunctious 7-year-old.
And he's really the sinew that holds the whole thing together, isn't he?
Yeah, I love Pearlie.
He's a beautiful boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You want to tell us anything about him? I know it's spoiler city to talk too much.
It's hard to talk about it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have two kids, and my youngest is 3, and my oldest is 5. So, and they were, you know, I was pregnant with one when I was writing it, and I had a little baby when I was writing it. So people think that the book is based on my own kids, and I didn't really know my own kids like that yet. I still don't. I'm still getting to know them that way.
Mm.
But Pearlie's voice just came to me, and I think part of it is that I was really getting in deep with these three women who are raising Pearlie, and their voices came first. and the book just needed some relief. They just needed some more wildness, something else to be unleashed, and Pearlie's voice just came off the page, just kind of burst in. It was really irrepressible. And I'm happy to get a lot of feedback from kids, from people who are now adults who say that Pearlie reminds them of themselves when they were a child, or just anyone who's kind of felt on the outside or struggled to stay true to themselves in the face of normative culture. And yeah, I think there's a little bit of all of us probably in Pearlie.
The book is Stay and Fight. Madeline Fitch wrote it. She joins us on the telephone from Athens County, Ohio. And on the cover, you alluded to this briefly a moment ago. We have a kind of a crevice, and there's a snake poking its head out of that crevice. And I've never read a book that had snakes featured so prominently as part of the story. What is it about these snakes?
Well, like I said at the beginning, snakes are one of the impulse for me to write the book. And a lot of people responding to the book and reviewers seem to think of the snake as a metaphor, because snakes are often used metaphorically.
Mm.
And I mean, snakes don't even need to be metaphors, because snakes are snakes. And around here, they're everywhere, and they figure prominently in people's lives. And I think it's especially interesting to me that snakes, the local knowledge around snakes in this area often goes directly against what snake experts say. So all my neighbors say that the black snakes eat copperheads. So then when I'm doing research for the novel, I look it up in snake books. It says, some people say black snakes eat copperheads, but black snakes don't eat copperheads. Well, I can't find a single local who will tell you that a black snake does not eat a copperhead. You know, so it led me, just the stories about snakes really led me into these questions about local knowledge and who your allegiance to, you know, is when you're learning about a place and what's true about a place. And I also, you know, I was someone who grew up in a city, and I assumed that the black snakes in my area would be something that people felt bad about. Well, people feel good about the black snakes because they eat mice and rodents.
Mm-hmm.
And people like having them. They're kind of like a good luck thing to have in your garden. And people cohabitate with them. You know, I have neighbors who say, well, we tell the kids, go set the table. Remember, there's a black snake in the linen drawer, so you have to kind of like reach to the side when you get the napkins. And that was just a lot for me to learn and to wrap my head around when I was new to the area. And I think it says a lot about different ways that people can live and love the land and be bonded to the land and the place that they live.
When I mentioned earlier that you have four points of view, did I forget one? Doesn't Rudy have a point of view briefly?
Well, Rudy almost has a point of view. And actually, I have to say that I was listening to, it's appropriate to talk about this week, an interview with Toni Morrison one time, and she was talking about how sometimes you just invent a character that just threatens to take over your entire book.
Uh-huh.
If you let him. And you kind of have to be careful about that. Sometimes it's good, sometimes you don't want them to take over. And Rudy was that character for me. I mean, as soon as that voice started talking in the book, I thought, this whole book could be Rudy. I mean, that character voice just kept offering up more to me. And I think that's one reason why I decided to not put his voice as a point of view, because I felt like having him be observed by the other characters and work his way into conversation and into scene was enough. Then, you know, if I had added him as another first person point of view, it would have been maybe a little too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rudy is a powerful guy. He's got the biggest bar on his chainsaw, and he's an arborist. And I know you have first person experience with guys like Rudy, and what a wonderful thing it is when you start reading your book and you read the first page, and I guarantee you, if you're a reader, you're either going to throw the book as far away as you can on that first page, or you're just going to be so hooked like I was, and you're just going to read, 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 and just go, man, this is incredible.
Well, thank you.
Because that first page, I mean, you nailed it. You really worked on that, didn't you?
Well, I did, and, you know, to me, it's a little bit of a feminist joke, right? Like, you start the story out with a testicle infection.
Right.
And you're really making the reader think that this kind of swashbuckling man is going to be steering the action, and it turns out Rudy's a real cream puff, he's real vulnerable, and the women in the novel are really making things happen.
The book is Stay and Fight. Madeline Fitch wrote it. All right. Tell us what the story is about without spoiling it.
The story is about three women raising a child partly by circumstance and partly by choice on their own terms in the hills of southeast Ohio. They are torn from each other when black rat snakes infest their house and a pipeline is permitted down one side of their land, and they have to do what they can to stay together and resist displacement. And I think for me it's a lot about the ways that families fight for each other and fight for the places that they love despite the odds.
Hmm. You mentioned that you've had people comment to you about how they related to Pearlie and they remembered their childhoods and it brought back memories of those childhoods. And I'll often find a peripheral character in a novel that I'm particularly fond of. And in your novel, I think it's the person, for me, that is destined to become Pearlie's first real friend. I love this kid, and I related to him.
To Altamont?
Yes.
Yes, I love him. Thank you for noticing.
What a sweet guy. And the perfect friend for Pearlie.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't give that away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that got me about the book was I kept reading it, and I'm like, okay, where are we going to go with this? How can she possibly end this story? Are we going to get any resolution here? And I'm thinking about how you created the story, and I'm not going to give anything away about how it ends, but the ending is so beautiful, and yet it's we don't have that much that's been resolved. It's like we've just gone on this wild ride and a very emotional one. And anyone that gets to the ending without shedding a tear just wasn't paying attention.
Oh. Well, you know, I mean, to me, I'm tired of stories and of fiction where the fact that there's no real resolution means that people are sort of numb and checked out and bored or isolated, right? That doesn't feel real to me, and I wanted to make an ending where people are taking their chance where they can and they're looking for opportunities for action without any guarantee of how that's going to end up. Especially children are extremely vulnerable to forces of domination, and they'll take their chance when they see it. And so Pearlie takes his chance, and every character in the novel looks for opportunities for agency and autonomy, even if they don't know how it's going to turn out. And I think part of that is that we are unrecognizable to ourselves if we don't do that.
Mm. I love the tree aspects of this. I've had a number of battles with trees over the years, and I love trees. But when you have the viewpoint of, yeah, this tree could fall on the house, or we don't have enough trees, or maybe we should plant some trees, or maybe we need fruit trees. And you have so much fun with trees in this, and Rudy's obsession with fruit trees. I love that whole sideline when they get involved with the fruit trees. That uh-huh. That is just hilarious.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, there's sometimes this, people talk about the novel being like a protest novel or a novel of resistance, you know, because there's, and we're not going to do spoilers, but there's like these sort of big acts of resistance. And I just, what I think is kind of funny is how people like to act like there's a huge difference between conflictual action and then sort of just action that's creative. Like what, planting a tree is seen as the opposite of marching in the street.
Uh-huh.
Right? But I think what I think is interesting and what I think comes up in the book is that if you're really sticking to your principles with creative, formative action, like planting trees, it's going to lead you into conflict eventually and be just as sort of a potent and conflictual resistance stance as anything else.
Yes, for sure. The book is Stay and Fight, and it's a very apt title, and Madeline Fitch wrote it, and you can meet her. She will be having a book signing in Cincinnati Tuesday night, this Tuesday. That
yeah.
is August 20th at 7 o'clock. She'll be at the Joseph Beth Booksellers 2692 Madison Road, 7 o'clock, introducing the book to readers in the Cincinnati area. So if you're in the Cincinnati area on Tuesday night, you can meet Madeline. And this is kind of a rollout for you, isn't it? Have you done many events yet?
No, I'm just starting. And there's going to be so many events. And actually, being the parent of two small kids, I'm like, look, like the one in Yellow Springs on October 6th, I'm bringing my five-year-old just to so he and I can have a special trip together, because I'm about to be doing a lot of events. This is just the first of many, and I'm glad it's happening in Ohio and in Appalachian, Ohio, broadly stated. That feels really, really good to me.
Well, as we get closer to October, I'll be sure to remind our listeners and readers that you're going to be in Yellow Springs. I'll get that info together.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, and thanks for reminding people about Joseph Beth on Tuesday the 20th.
That's Tuesday. This Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, she'll be at the Joseph Beth Booksellers, 2692 Madison Road, introducing Stay and Fight. And I see your book is getting some nice attention. How did you get into this? How did you get a book deal? How did you get hooked up with a very respectable publisher? I love this imprint.
Yeah, they're great to work with. I mean, I've been writing for a very long time and just kind of putting one foot in front of the other and, like everybody else, just collecting rejections. But I think one thing that's buoyed me is like the kind of, I guess I would call it the do-it-yourself or like punk community, where people are really making art on their own and distributing it on their own and kind of making things happen on their own. And so I spent years just really doing it that way, and eventually an agent reached out to me and sort of noticed what I was doing.
Oh.
And that's made it a lot easier for me, especially as somebody who wants to live in a rural place and raise kids, and you know what I mean? Like, it feels really good to have that kind of advocacy at this time in my life, but it's been a lot of years. I ran a theater company for a long time, too, so I did a lot of organizing that way. Yeah, I really encourage people to find their own writing communities instead of trying to just, like, wait for somebody else to make it happen for you. I ran a theater company, and we toured around for a very long time, and I always would distribute my writing that way. And, I think I just stayed focused on creating writing community and being, running workshops at the public library and finding other writers that I liked what they were doing and really focusing on that instead of focusing on the industry side of it. And for me, eventually, I found the right place for my writing, and things have been going really well on this, like what you said, like this FSG is a great press, and it's been really nice to get this kind of attention for the book. But, writing community really comes first, I think.
Did you say you're originally from the Northwest?
Yeah, I grew up in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. How on earth did you end up in rural Athens County?
Well, that's a good question. My partner had a piece of land here and was living off the grid and kind of building things on their own. And so I, like I said, I was touring with the theater company. I didn't have any particular place I needed to be. And at the time I thought, hey, I can move out to this isolated rural place because I'm on tour half the year anyway, and it's fine. And pretty soon after that, stopped touring with the theater company and pretty much been settled down in one place ever since and really learned the beauty of rooted homeness and really knowing my neighbors and writing and organizing in a really locally rooted way.
You apparently fell in love.
It's really beautiful here. Yeah. Well, you know.
How far are you from Fur Peace?
Not very far. Okay. And actually, I saw the best show of my life there, which was Buffy St. Marie doing this acoustic show 2 years ago. Oh, my God. I'll travel to see her again. Yeah.
Well, she's a legend.
I know. She's an icon.
And how did you become a tree person? I mean, actually doing the arborist work. How'd you get involved with that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I've spent years, I mean, I've always had jobs working outside and also jobs cooking and, I mean, like a lot of people, just like food service type jobs and physical labor, like landscaping and working for the Forest Service, doing like trail building or seasonal work. And so when I moved here, it's actually one thing about this area is it is pretty hard to find employment, and it's not any easier if you're a woman. And I think a lot of people are getting jobs kind of word of mouth through friends. And so, I knew somebody who was, I actually know a lot of arborists Mm-hmm. I found out as I was writing the acknowledgements page to my book, a lot of these guys that trim trees. So I got into it that way and just sort of learned on the job. I had chainsaw experience and a lot of outdoor work experience, and I had to kind of brush up on my knots. But, yeah, that's how I did that.
Wow. Well, it's very complex. I think that arborists are some of the great geometry and mathematician experts. They're just amazing how they figure out how they're going to drop a tree in a certain slot, and it's just as fascinating and super dangerous. And the most exciting part of the book for me is when they have to cut down this tree. And I'm not going to say much about that, but my other favorite peripheral character is the owner of the tree.
Oh, yeah, Aldi.
Yeah. He's another really compelling character who's just kind of off the radar. He's an oddball. He's a strange guy.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we're all strange guys.
Thank you.
I mean, really.
Right. I agree.
And people are full of contradictions. And I think, especially right now, I feel like a lot of stories that are being told, definitely about Appalachia, about this region, about demographics and voters and this and that, it kind of makes people seem like they're all one way, they're all this way or they're all that way.
Uh-huh.
And that's definitely not been my experience. Living here has also opened my eyes to lots and lots of different ways that people live, and I tried to reflect that in my characters. And I hope that my loved ones and neighbors feel like I've done it justice. Thanks for noticing the tree work. I think that I will say for any writers out there listening, if you have a skill that's just practical, you know, so much of writing is like thinking about your characters and how they're feeling and what their motivations are and how they're relating to each other. Sometimes you just need a break and you need to go back to some research and some skill, some basic, practical, get people moving and doing something. And for me, the times where I just got to write about tree work, it was such a relief. And it's like you said, it's a beautiful kind of work, and documenting it was amazing. It was a really wonderful part of the writing process. And it was really wonderful to share those sections with people who have no context for tree work, because they would tell me what parts they couldn't understand. They're like, well, wait a second. So they're cutting this part, and that part fell, and they wanted that other part to go that way, and they were, what tool is that? And did you mean to say this size chainsaw bar instead of that? And so I'd have to rewrite the paragraph, like, just step by step, and try to imagine that I was somebody who had never done that kind of work before. And I felt like that was really put me through my paces as a writer, and it's very good practice for fiction writing.
The book is Stay and Fight. Madeline Fitch wrote it. She joins us on the program today. You also just alluded a moment ago to the fact that in southeastern Ohio, it can be challenging. The economy is sort of depressed over there. It's the old coal mining area. It's not the greatest for agriculture. It's kind of hilly and woody and bushy and beautiful, but not real good for farming or a lot of other things. And these people keep going up north to get these high-paying jobs. Is this real? Is this really happening up north? I mean, I where I live, I don't hear about this.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely the oil and gas industry, the fracking industry, hit harder in the northern part of the region first. And then, of course, down in Appalachia, it's traditionally sacrifice zone for a lot of extractive industries. That's what the industry calls it.
Mm-hmm.
Calls it a sacrifice zone, so that they ship all the waste down here. And I also used a lot of research that I did about the ways that the oil and gas industry is impacting land and communities out west. So some of the like man camp style descriptions, they're a conflation of ways that the oil and gas industry is affecting and impacting communities in a lot of different places. They have really similar tactics and ways that they go in into different communities. And one thing I noticed when we were trying to fight the pipeline going past our house is that we'd be talking to our neighbors, and my neighbor would say, yeah, this industry is really bad. It's worse than you can imagine. And you know how I know? Because I worked for them. I went up north and I worked up there.
Uh-huh.
And I could tell you stories. And so, I mean, the worst stories, the most damning stories I got about the industry was from calling up people, family members, in-laws, friends, neighbors, people who have worked for the industry, and they can tell you some stories. And that's another thing that I think is pretty interesting about this particular moment, is that people are driven by economic circumstance to work for industries that they might not have any love for at all, right? And so the same people who are fighting fracking might also be people who've had to lease their land or been mandatorily pooled. And it's not an easy binary, you know, between people who are against it and people who are for it. So the same people who are fighting it also might be working for it.
Gotcha. I have a lot of favorite sections of the book, but I've got to say, one of the ones that's really a standout for me is when they are up north. One of your characters goes up north to get the big bucks, and these Native American workers. I loved the interactions with them and the things they had to say and the wisdom. And when we have the woman taking the little creature away and the cigarette thing, that just really struck me because I got it. I knew what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I said, I try to base a lot of the writing I'm doing off of, interviews and conversations I have with people that I know, and then share drafts with people to say, does this sound about right? Is this sort of what you remember? So it's fiction. It's not autobiography, and it's not biography, and it's not meant to be documentary. But I still do feel like I want to do some really deep listening, especially when I'm writing across culture, across identity, and that kind of thing.
Well, I find it inspiring, entertaining, humorous, yet there's a lot of complexity, and it leaves you thinking. You really ponder it.
Well, good. That means it's working.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. The book is Stay and Fight. Madeline Fitch wrote it, and you can meet her. She will be in Cincinnati for a book signing at Joseph Beth Booksellers. That's August 20th, Tuesday evening, coming right up here in a few days, 7 o'clock in the evening, 2692 Madison Road. That's Joseph Beth Booksellers. As she rolls out the book, and in October, she's going to be coming through Yellow Springs, and I'll update you on that as we get closer to the date. And Madeline, I wish you the greatest luck and enjoyment with your book rollout.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you for your thoughtful questions.
My pleasure. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958. It's been the Book Nook. My guest has been Madeline Fitch. Her book is Stay and Fight. And please tell me you're working on another book.
Oh, definitely. Of course.
Yeah? And that's all you're going to tell me?
I don't know if I can. I'll tell you one thing. I felt like with this novel, I tried to make it very controlled in terms of how many characters there are. And in the next book, there are so many characters. There are so many relationships. I was like, what's going to happen if I just pull out all the stops? So,
How fun. Well, I'll look forward to that. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, Madeline.
Thank you.